two pieces of mail up to my SMTP mail server on the iPad, it would tell me it could not resolve the host name. Until I rebooted the iPad, I could not send any email out on my own network.
Okay, without going into the... let me take that from your detailed question back to a little bit more general. I think we're not quite to the level of detail the question has, but a part of your question is real important and applies at the level we're talking. The question was, how come sometimes when I send with Eudora a mail that'll go to my server to forward it on, I get a bounced message that says I can't resolve the host name? What that means is that the server that you sent it to accepted the mail from you and then took the name in the to field that it was supposed to go to, tried to do a DNS lookup on it, and could not successfully do it. Because it could not turn the name into a computer, it had no option but to send the mail back to you with an error message that says, you have sent this to a name that I cannot look up in the DNS. And the rest of your question comes down to why couldn't it look it up in DNS, and that gets detailed enough, I'd like to defer that a little bit. Yes?
Because here I've got prompts where it'll send a message back to me saying there's no at host.
No at host.
That's here.
There, and again, if that's specifically on an iPad, are you using the release version? Because some of the earlier beta versions had a problem in scanning that created that problem.
Yes, I'm not sure.
If you're up to using version 1.1 and that happens, it's supposed to mean that if you looked in the message, the address is not properly formed. What it means is it might say to Phil, and there is no at esoft.com. That's what it means. There is no at sign host portion to the address is what that error message technically means. If the mess, there are some of the early beta versions of the iPad up through 9.5 or 9.6, I think, had problems where certain messages that were legitimately formed, the scanner had an error that would create that. But in the release, that error is gone. So that's why I asked if you've got your release software on or if you're still running a beta. I was going to say, if you've had that since the release, look at the message and see if the message is good. It may be, though, that what you've got is you're not having it anymore, too. That could be the case. But what that message means, no at host, means I looked in there and said to Phil, maybe, and didn't say to Phil at. There was no at esoft.com. There was no at anything after the name is what that message means. And, of course, you can do that. You can send mail in to a server that's just tight with the address typed in wrong. And the server has no option but to tell you that and send you the message back. Yes?
One other question. To the left of the at sign, are there any rules, iPad-specific rules, that say you can't have a dot in the name or anything?
No. The question is about the username portion of the domain name system. Are there any rules about what can be there as far as dots or not? And does the iPad have any rules that are different from general rules? And the answer is the iPad rules are not different from general rules, and the general rules are that you can have letters, numbers, a dot, or a percent. The percent is a holdover from the old UUCP bang addressing, and they moved all that over into the username side with percents. And so the username can now have percents in it, and it's okay. I'd stay away from it because there's probably some old software that would try to turn that into a UUCP and fire it off somewhere. But
I see that in my case when I'll have like 50 UUCP messages.
Absolutely.
No idea how to retrieve them. Is there a UUCP mail reader? Like there's a POP3 mail reader?
No. I'm not... We're down to a detail. I'll work this with you, but I'd like to defer that. Don't let to everybody, if I defer some of these questions, it doesn't mean I don't want to answer them. It means that I don't want to jump from the progression we're going in here down to a tiny detail when I think it's still a little too early to get there. So don't, when we get back to it, I will not necessarily remember all these questions I've told you to hold on to. So later on, you should be able to tell when it's getting to be time. And if it seems like we've gone past it hasn't come up, then bring them back up. I'll address them all. I just want to try to keep from breaking the flow up too much.
How is the third and fourth level right here? If you have
The question is, how is the third and the fourth level and everything handled? If I had something like phil.lab.esoft.com, I would have an entry in here that was phil.lab.esoft.com. Is there any way to handle all instances? There's a certain amount of wildcarding you can do by putting asterisk.lab.esoft.com. We'll get into it a little later when we get into the details. It's very tricky if you try to do it. You can get a lot of unintended side effects. Yes?
And from what I understand, you can have all the sub-levels. You can sort that differently. Sort like part A dot lab dot, okay, and then part B dot lab dot.
Yeah, the question is, can you sort these all out in your file? When we get into a little bit in doing the files themselves, I think you'll see how that works out a little clearer. But the answer is yes, you have complete control over this. This is your file. You can organize it any way you want to organize it. Okay? The big tool that you use in DNS is NSLookup. NSLookup is your diagnostic tool to diagnose either the problems of yourself or others. When you think you have an issue and you want to know what's going on, NSLookup is the tool. And when we get into this, we're going to use NSLookup quite a bit here this afternoon and show you how you use it to diagnose, because as you diagnose problems and we go back and make files, you'll see how they play together and you'll start to see the process. It really is a very simple process, but until you've walked through it a few times, it can look confusing. By the way, a book that I would recommend on this very, very highly is by O'Reilly Publishers called DNS and Bind. Probably one of the best books. Do we have that book here, Chris, so we can give them a visual aid and say this is what it looks like? DNS and Bind, B-I-N-D. It's by O'Reilly Publishing. It describes it for Unix systems. The iPad uses exactly the same syntax, so the same everything it's talking about all applies. NSLookup will let you ask questions of any particular query, any particular server. It will let you, you can pass that around and let them take a look at it. Control what type of resource record you're supposed to look up, like tell me if there's any A records for this, tell me if there's any NS records, any MX records, any whatever. You can either make a recursive or a non-recursive request. So you can say, server, did you get that out of your cache, or did you ask uphill to do that? Do you know it on your own, or does somebody tell you that? And it lets you just poke around in the domain name system and really understand what's going on. So the DNS is basically the telephone book. Its purpose in life is to turn names into computer names and numbers. And the only real difference between the addressing and other parts of it is that email has a whole separate structure in the MX structure. I'll take a couple of questions. I guess the sandwiches are here, and we could probably just go ahead and break for lunch a little early. I was thinking maybe since we're supposed to break at 12:30, I'd try to quick start some of the lab, and then I'm thinking, well, if the food's here, let's go eat, and we'll go to the lab afterwards and just make that a little bit longer after lunch. Any questions?
So kind of going back to the MX records, would this be a reason not do this, where instead of saying, like, mail that goes to lab.esoft.com, instead of telling it to go to, like,
you can put an IP address there, although it's not generally done, and I'm not sure there aren't some resolvers on the net that have trouble with that. It should work, but some of the primitive resolvers out there may struggle with it. If you want mail to go to the same machine, which may be a variation on the question you're asking, what you should do is say lab.esoft.com, MX, lab.esoft.com. Then you'd have lab.esoft.com, A, and the address. And the answer is it has to look it up in that order. That's what it does. It first tries to find through the MX records what machine am I supposed to send it to by name, and then it does an A record lookup on that name, final name that it's trying to get the address of that machine to send it to. And yeah, it seems like you put the IP address out there directly and shortcut all that looking up. and it mostly works. It should work 100%. I'm just not certain it does for every kind of software that's out there trying to resolve. Certainly iPads, Unix boxes, most of the stuff will handle that just fine, but it's not normally done. Yes?
They're getting some problems with, you mentioned FTP and reverse lookup.
Yes.
Other things that my users have been reporting is on some of the IRC.
Yes.
That's the only place I've seen.
IRC is another place where reverse lookups are real important too, and if the reverses don't come through, they'll bounce you pretty hard on those as well.
Yeah, now is that probably on my end?
Yes. What that would mean is if it's your user calling in, you're giving them some sort of a dynamic address because of the line that they're on. So they'd have a particular IP address. And what it means is that IP address, you have not listed reverse. So you need to list, if you have 25 dynamic IP addresses you give out, you have to make up names like PPP dot whatever, PPP1, PPP2, PPP3, and put them all in reverse. And if you do not do that, when people call those lines, they do not have a reverse address, and they're second-class citizens on the net. There's a lot of servers that will bounce them because their reverse can't be looked up. Mail servers will do it. If you don't have a reverse, you will get a number of odd rejections that don't seem to make sense. And we're going to go through how reverse is done. Basically, the underlying story of a reverse is there's a special domain, .arpa. And you list your reverse. You have to have the reverse pointer from your provider normally, because normally the provider who gave you your lease line and gave you your address block has it registered with the internic and the root servers to point to their server, and then they'll generally make themselves secondary to you or point to your server. And then but you have to go through that process and make it happen. You not only have to put the domain in, you have to make sure it's being pointed to through your provider or directly from the root server. And we'll go through some of that afterwards as well, how all that's done. But basically, the way a reverse address is mapped is in-addr.arpa is always the first and second level domain. And then the subdomains are your IP address reversed. And there's actually a hierarchical reason for why it's reversed. But if your address is 199.45.143.2, your reverse address lookup for DNS would be 2.143.45.199.in-addr.arpa. And you have to have a domain like that with all your addresses listed and giving them names for the reverse to work out. That I leave the reverse for the lab because it's easier to handle that when you're looking at example files than just being told about it.
That'd be true for everybody on your land.
It's true for everybody on your land, for every address you got. If you don't put a reverse in for it, they are second-class citizens.
Class C, you gotta have pretty much.
If you got a Class C, you need to reverse every address you're going to use.
Now, what's the basic purpose, though, of the reverse address? I seem to have missed that point.
The basic purpose of reverse addressing originally was to say, if I only know your IP number, I want to find out the name. So if I only know, and the reason that's true is when you connect to a computer, you've dialed its number, and it knows your number. Think of TCP/IP as having built-in caller ID. It's on the packet. It says, okay, I'm being connected to by 199.45.143.2. He'll do a reverse lookup to say, oh, that's esoft.com. So he can say, I'm being connected to by esoft.com.
It resolves the machine resolving the human, not the human resolving.
Absolutely. And that's why it's reverse.
That now it's
and yes, and those are the kind of questions. Yes, it's the machine name resolving back to the human name. That's why it's reverse, because forward is you start with the human name and resolve to the machine name. And what's happened is that because it can do that easily, people have said that if you have not listed yourself in a reverse domain name, you may be using a machine without the permission of your administrator. You may be doing something,
spoofing it.
You may be playing some game. And reality is it's not going to catch hardly any games at all, but it's become culturally something that servers do. And the bottom line is why they do it is not important. When they do it, if you don't list the reverse address, you can't get in. Okay? Well, we'll break for lunch. Sandwiches are on the table down here. You can go outside to eat them, come back in here and eat them, whatever you want to do. It's kind of a nice day, but we'll be back here. Let's meet back here at quarter after. We'll get a little jump on this. Do is go through some exercises. Now, this is the part of the class that suffers most for my accident last night, because this is the part I was going to rehearse as soon as I put the cover back on the light. And instead, I spent the next hour taking 3 stitches in my thumb and then feeling like not really a lot like doing much, but going home and sitting in a chair till I fell asleep, because I was feeling really stupid. With good reason, this was a really stupid thing to do. But this part right now, I have not actually sat down and rehearsed and walked through like I normally would have done by now. So we're all going to walk this one together, which will give you plenty of opportunity. I won't go too fast for you, I'm sure, on this part. What we're going to do here is use the iPad's DNS server and NS lookup program to investigate the DNS we just discussed and do some applications with it. Do some things and look at how they are accomplished. Now, I'm going to start with NS lookup. NS lookup on the iPad starts out with a non-recursive request. I did this for me, and it probably was a mistake. Most NS lookups default to a recursive request, and you have to say don't. I never remember to say don't, and I forget I didn't, and I think I'm looking at one thing and I'm looking at something else, so I did this one upside down. The issue behind that is if you want it to look uphill to find something, you have to say -REC. I'm going to move this keyboard over here because apparently if I stand up there, I'm right in front of everything. So as an example, if I take and look up something that I don't think this one knows. I get a fast answer that says that there are no records for this name. And your first thought is, well, geez, I can ping that, I can do stuff, how come there's no answer? Because that was a non-recursive request of this server, all this answer means is this server does not already know the answer. It would have to go look. If I put -recursive on here, it will go look, and you can see it making requests. This is it walking up and down the request tree to the root server, to the delegated server, to get the answer. And then it has the answer. And that's what the difference between a recursive and a non-recursive request is. Remember, a non-recursive request just asks a server, what do you, this server, know locally about the name I'm asking? A recursive request says, what can you find out if you don't know locally? Now here we see some of these records. Let me see if I can adjust this sideways a little. This looks like it's a little clipped along the edge here. There we are. Looks a little bit better at the top. You can see several things. This is a non-authoritative response. What does that mean? That means this server is not authoritative for this name. It doesn't mean this response is bad. It just means it didn't come from somebody who actually is the zone of authority for the name. It came secondhand. It's secondhand information. You can see the SOA record here. And it wrapped around the screen because it's long. You can see here the cache time in seconds. that says if you wish to remember this locally, you're allowed to remember it for this long, after which you have to forget it. You have to go back to source and look it up again if it's been longer than that since you got it. Type internet, and then these are the individual record types. Three name servers listed, an A record, an MX record, and an SOA. The SOA indicates that ns1.aquila.com is the name server on which the actual text file that holds this database resides. There's three name servers, but only this one that's listed here is where the file is. These two are set up as what's called secondary DNS servers. The concept of primary and secondary DNS servers are so you can have multiple servers, meaning that if one server's down and you want to make the request, you can go ask the other server and still get an answer, even though one's down. But if you have a database and you make three copies of it and you apply a few months, what's going to happen? They're not the same anymore. Exactly right. So the concept of primary and secondary was to solve that problem. The secondary server says, has a list in it of what the primary server is, where the database file is, and it periodically reaches over and says, has you changed? And if it has, it downloads it. So that means that you can go to the one machine, change the file, and in an hour or two, the other servers will have downloaded it and it stays the same. Pardon?
When that download actually occurs, is that controllable?
Yes. It can be forced from only on the secondary's end. You can't force it from the primary. You can, right here, this number says how many seconds should the secondary ask to see if there's been a change. So in your SOA record, one of these numbers is how often should I ask? If I ask and fail, how long should I wait to try to ask again? If I've done this asking and never gotten an answer in this long, then I'm supposed to not be authoritative anymore because I've got old data and I can't get good data. I'm supposed to forget I know. And this last number here is the default TTL. You have an option when you write these records to leave this field blank. And if you leave it blank, this number from the SOA record will be put there for you. This first number here is the criticalist, mostest criticalist, the superest, mostest criticalist number in the SOA record, this 8. That can be any number you want it to be. It's the serial number, they call it. It's a sequence number. And what it is if you change this file, you need to make this number bigger than it was. So you would change it to 9, to 10. Some people use the date in ANSI format. They say 95/06/11. And then if they change it again, if you change it twice in one day, you have to stick a number after it or something. Any number will do, as long as every time you change it, you make the number bigger than it was. Why? Because that's how secondaries know you changed the data. They don't really check the whole file. They, every this many seconds, they will do a query for your SOA record. They will check the serial number. If it's smaller or the same from the one they already have, they say, my data is still good. If this number got bigger, they say, aha, the guy on the primary changed the file. I should download a whole new one. This is a way to get yourself in trouble. There's no check on it. You can go in here and edit these records and change them and not change that number, and your secondaries don't get the new data. And now you get that wonderful effect where randomly ESOFCOM means the new stuff and randomly it means the old stuff depending on which server responded. So the serial number in your SOA record is how secondary servers know that you have changed the file, and they know it when that number gets bigger. The reason for making that number get bigger and not just be different to trigger it is that you can have a secondary slave off another secondary. And you can have one secondary download from the primary and another secondary download from that secondary, any way you want to set it up. And so there's a possibility that you made a new number and it got passed to this secondary, and when he goes back and checks the other secondary, somehow it's got older data even than this, so the number will be even smaller. It says, I'll leave that alone if it's older. So that it will always eventually, in this download sequence, everybody will get the newest stuff and nobody will think the older stuff is really newer stuff. And that's why it's important when you change this number, it always has to be bigger, a bigger number than it was last time. Other than that, there's no requirement for what that number is, so you can make any system you want to make, be it date, be it time, be it whatever you want. It's a 32-bit number, so it can be, was it 10 digits long, I think? So you got a lot of flexibility there for what you pick for that number. I tend to just use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but a lot of people like to put dates and times in there so they know when they changed it. MX record. Here's an example that says if you send email to Aquila.com, it's really supposed to go to ns2.aquila.com. If you FTP or Telnet Aquila.com, it's going to go to 204.95.88.5. And these are the name servers on which are supposedly authoritative for it. Now let's do this request in a non-recursive way all the way from the top. Whoops, that's an equal sign. If this gets too bad, Chris, I may need you to be Mr. Keyboard here. I'm okay so far, but if my thumb appendage makes typing not work out to the point where I think we're really killing the class here, I may have to have some keyboard assistance. What I'm doing here is saying NSLOOKUP, look up the name Aquila.com, ask server a.root-servers.net. So go to that server and ask what that server knows about this name. So I'm going to go to the root server, and as anticipated, here's what the root server will tell me. It will tell me the name server for this server. There are two of them that are registered. So right away we see a little bit of a disparity here. His actual authoritative name showed three, but only two of them are registered. This is an opening for having problems. That's why I picked this particular one, because I know it's there. I know why it's this way. And it would show you some of the subtle things that can happen. But it says there are two name server records. Now, it also adds in the A records and ships them. It doesn't have to, but that's why it's an additional. As a nice guy, it does, so you don't then have to go back and ask these names again and resolve them before you can go ask them for the next name, because he's only going to give you the name. Now, the next thing you're going to do if you're going to contact it is you need to know the address. If he didn't give you those addresses, now you got to go back to the root server with a new name, go to this and resolve it all the way down, and you got to do a whole side resolution just to find out how to contact the name server. So some of these, when you see records set up that way, that's why, to answer some earlier questions, you can get four or five requests spawn out of one request and there's nothing wrong. It's just that they haven't given you all the pieces that you might want in one move. You have to go get every one of them the hard way. And that can happen if people set databases up wrong. So now what will happen is we say, okay, let's try ns1.aquila.com. So now we're going to bring our request up and change the server. And now we've gone to the authoritative server, and what do we see at the top of the screen? Authoritative response. That means I am really authoritative for this name. And it gives all the data for the entire structure. That's the full resolver process done in extremely slow motion using NSLOOKUP for each piece. First, we went to the root server and asked about the name. The root server gave us the two authoritative servers that are supposed to be authoritative for that name. Then we took one of them and we went and asked that authoritative server for the actual data. Yes?
NSLOOKUP.com is reported twice in additional information.
Yes, it is, and I don't know why that would be. I think he's got that on a Windows NT box he's playing with. It might be a case of that server's doing it. That's harmless, but it's wasteful. The authority and the additionals are supposed to tell you the name servers that reported it and their addresses. It's kind of a wild and woolly place, and you get a lot of interesting things in there from name servers. As long as you get at least what you need. If you don't get everything you need, then it'll generate a separate request to go get the other pieces. Are there any questions on how that resolution process works when all you know is the name of the root server? You can work any name out. We'll do a couple more and see if we can be...
Can you do one that I wrote just the other day?
Certainly we can. What...
CUSCOMP.com.
Is that correct, the way I've typed it?
Yeah.
Okay. And we're going to go to a.root dash servers.net, which is one of the root servers. They're A, B, C through E, for those who want to know. And we're going to go to the root server for cuscomp.com. And the root server tells us that there are two authoritative servers for this. SoSync.net and NS.OSSINC.net. And it says, as far as the InterNIC is concerned, that's where this is authoritative. It only gave us the A record for one of them, which means if we go to look up the other one, we'll have to do an extra query to get the A record for it. So let's take the one we got the A record for here, NS.OSSINC.net. It's a possibility. It depends. Servers just sort of do things sometimes like that. Now, this is an example of what would come up with lame delegation. Because I went to this server, and this server is not authoritative for this name. Therefore, this name cannot be resolved on the internet. Now, you put this together. Let's walk this out. This is a good example because, not picking on you, hopefully we'll help you through why this has came out the way it came out. What machine did you put this on?
My server, my iPad.
And it's not either of these two machines, is it?
It's the SOS.
It's the SOS? Okay. Now, this one is listed, and this one clearly should be secondary to your machine, and it's not. Because it knows nothing about it. It's supposed to be authoritative. So if you go to this server, you get a non-authoritative response, you can't get there. And here, sosinc.net, we'll walk it out and see if there's any problems or whether it's just that the internet didn't have that right. So we'll work that one out by saying, you remember it, it's SOSINC. Okay. And the root server says that those two machines should know the address for that machine. This is exactly what a resolver is going to have to do to follow this out. If it's going to get to that address because it wasn't given the A record, it's got to step off to the side now and do what we're doing. Get the A record for NSOSINC. So it's going to go up here and says, okay, we should go to NSOSSinc.net to get that A record. And we're going to go then and say, okay, there's a good little resolver. We understand that we're supposed to go to ns.ossinc.net to get it. And we go here, and we get the A record. We now know the address of sosync.net, which is 206.104.29.3. So now that we know that, we can go back to our original request. Did I spell that right? Yeah, no, I didn't. I thought I left the letter out. Cus, C-O-M-P, dot com at sosinc.net. Was that it? Yes, sosinc.net. Now we got there, and this one is authoritative. Now, this is a classic example of why somebody would look up your addresses out of this. Sometimes it would work, and sometimes it wouldn't. Now I'm going to stop for a moment and ask questions about what we have found. I tried to leave all the pieces on the screen, so let's see if I can walk through it here a little quicker. The first thing we did was we looked up at the root server, cusconf.com. It gave us two servers. Only gave us the A record on one of them, which means we're going to prefer that one. A resolver is going to try that one first because he doesn't have to go anywhere. To do the other one, he's got to go look. So it's going to try this one. Now, upon trying that server, what did we get? We found out that server is not authoritative. At this moment, you're going to get a lame delegation message because you have been told by the root server to go to a server which is authoritative, and when you get there, he's saying, I don't know nothing.
Could it be that this server doesn't know anything because of the serial number? Because when I rewrote
this server doesn't know anything because he, at this level, non-authoritative, he has not been able to download your database at a minimum. He may have never been told to. Has he been set up and made secondary? And if you don't know, it probably hasn't happened, I suspect. And that's most likely what's happened is no one has gone to this server and said, you're supposed to be secondary to this other server for this name. If you don't tell it to be, it won't do it spontaneously. So if you don't set him up to be secondary, he'll never know he's supposed to be authoritative. He'll never download the database. And you get exactly this, which is he sees this request coming to him for a name, and he says, I don't know why you think I'm supposed to know, because I don't have a clue. I don't know nothing. Gives it the Colonel Klink response. I know nothing. And this is what he's saying. Go back to the root servers, buddy, because I don't know anything. And if you go back to the root servers, what's going to happen? You're just going to go in a big circle till you hit eight times, and he's going to bounce out on lame delegation. Now, we went and wanted to look up the other one. Now, if you'll remember, because that one was lame, we're going to go try it again on the other server. So we got sosinc.net as a name, but we do not have an A record. So as the resolver, what do we have to do next? We have to go back to the root servers for sosync.net. And he says, okay, here's the name servers and their addresses that will know about sosync.net. So we go and say, okay, and now at last we get the A record. Now we can go look this up. Now we can go back to our original business and contact this name server and ask him. So we ask him, and sure enough, we get an authoritative response. This was a great example, and probably good for you to know that there's something wrong with it, too, that you can go fix. Yeah. And by the time the day's over, you should know how to fix this. If you don't, I've failed at what I'm trying to do right now in this part of the class, because the point is you should understand what you have to fix. First of all, this looks pretty confusing. The reason I went over this with the diagrams and the little ask up, ask down arrows was because if you don't have that picture in your head and you walk this through, you'll just get lost. Is there anybody who does not understand what we did? Because I want to go over this till everybody really understands what's happening. This is what will happen if you said FTP to cuscomp.com. Everything we did is what the DNS resolver will do to try to be able to FTP to that address.
If it gets the lane delegation, is it going to automatically try to look up?
Depends on the resolver and the server. Most will. The iPad will, and I think Unix boxes generally do. Not all of them will. It's optional at that point. You can just decide it's screwed, I give up. That's an option as well. The DNS spec doesn't really tell you what you're supposed to do there.
Does that SOA record look normal, Bill?
SOA record looks fine. Let's see. Well, maybe do you have a serial number in it?
Well, I don't think I do. That's
so what it looks like is that this may be malformed. Okay, what is this? Would be No, I think this is the serial number. Serial number is 60130, whether you meant it to be or not, I think. Then this is how frequently should a secondary poll, if it can't get through, how quickly should it retry? It's total time to give up if it can't get the data, and the default TTL, which apparently is what's being used. So no, that's a good one. This is your serial number, 60130. May not be what you meant to be your serial number, but you have enough numbers there, and this one is your serial number. Yes.
So would you be able to go back now and change the serial number to 1 and set the DNS server to say, okay, we're going to smaller number, but I want it to set as 1 and kind of start things over?
Well, yes, if that's the problem, but I'm going to guess the problem is more fundamental than that. I'm going to guess the other server has never been told it's supposed to be a secondary and download this database. In which case, you can change these numbers all day. The other guy's not going to look. Yes? Yes. There's questions come up a lot, and this is something I addressed a bunch in my earlier class a year ago when people were very new to this, and it probably bears repeating here. A lot of people start to say, what's okay? What's allowed? What can I do? This is the ultimate anything you can negotiate is okay world. All you need is a second machine somewhere. It could be your own. It could be someone else's. If it's someone else's, you might have another person who's got a site that you know. You have your site, they have their site, and you just make an agreement. I'll be secondary for you, you be secondary for me. Anytime you put something in, you send them email, say, be secondary for these names. And he does the same to you whenever he wants to add something in.
Your own secondary.
You can be your own secondary. You can be your own secondary in a variety of ways. If you really want to be sleazy about it, you can make your iPad have two addresses and register them both and only have one file and one server. You've accomplished the fact of getting registered with two addresses, but you've defeated the point of why they ask for two servers, which is to have two machines, because if your one machine is down, no one can get to you. That can be a temporary thing, though, if you think you're going to bring up a second thing that can do DNS in your own LAN. It's generally best to have somebody who's not on your LAN be your secondary, and frequently, in fact, in almost every case, whoever you get your leased line uphill from you will agree to be secondary for you. You just have to keep emailing them every time you add a name and say, add this one to be secondary for. Because likewise, they won't know to be secondary for a name you add if you don't tell them to be. Yes?
I'm primary for 15 domains now. Does each name file have to meet the serial number?
No. The serial number is only to tell you when that file's been changed. It has only very localized meaning. Your story, the question was, I'm primary for 15 domains. Does the serial number have to be different in each one of them? And the answer is no. Because the only thing the serial number means is that SOA record has it changed. And so if you have 15 and they all have serial number 1, that's fine. And when you edit one and change it, you make the serial number of that one 2. it's only local to that name. It's just saying for that one file. We're going to go through the file things and the downloading of secondaries in a minute, and maybe that'll clear it up. It's really just like if you were doing it as a person. There's a zone file for the name. I normally name them .na, you know, like esof.nam or whatever, but you can name anything you want. And the point is, on the secondary, if he's secondary for esof, he's got to go get that file for that name. And the serial number is, I have that file here, and that file has this serial number in it. What serial number is in your file? And when I move to the next one, the serial number in the other one's out of the picture. I'm starting over again, just comparing these two files. Does that answer your question? Okay, yes, Beck.
You also there were something about emailing your secondary name server. You added names to your file.
You can do it with a telephone, too, if you want. I mean, you just have to tell the operator of that system that he has to add a name that he's to be secondary for.
That was the purpose of the serial number.
The purpose of the serial number is once he's done it once, he never has to touch it again. To put it in the first place, he has to put each name in.
You're saying you added a name.
Like if I add a whole new name. I'm esof.com, and he's secondary for esof.com. And we worked all that out. And that's going great. Every time I edit it, he downloads it. It's going great. And now I get bozo.com. And I send in the forms to InterNIC, and I tell it to point to him, point to me. I get authorized. I edit my files. I create a new zone for bozo.com. I got to tell him to be secondary for bozo.com.
Okay. How does he do that?
He edits his file, which we'll get to in a moment. Hold on to that. We'll be to it in a second. What I want to be sure first is that you've understood how this resolution process worked, where all we had to visit. Helps you understand the things you see pop up on your iPad screen when you type ping somewhere and you see all these...